Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there, kitty girls. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am one of your hosts, Matt Koplik.
And I am one of your other hosts, John Wiscavage. Sometimes I like to, like, add, like, weird things or say weird things. And today I panicked. Like, as soon as it came up, I was like, oh, you know, I was thinking, oh, you'll think. I have also said, like, already four times.
It's starting off great, you guys!
Oh, my God!
Yeah, I panicked. I figured that my brain could have thought of something. This is why I should take an improv class. I've never taken one. But, yes,
I mean, I say this podcast is a good improv exercise for you. You yes and a lot to me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone also in life has to yes and to me with everything, because who knows what you're going to get with me. So, It's my way of giving back to the theater community.
Exactly. Within John lies three tall women, and you never know which woman you're going to get.
Because one could be a mean girl.
One could be a frozen ice princess.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. And one could be an angel in this America. Or I could be a Harry Potter.
Or you could just be a waitress.
Oh, I was once.
Yeah, we all were once. She used to be mine.
Oh, simultaneous joke power activate.
Oh my God, UCB.
Sarah Bareilles joke.
We just learned. That was 10 years worth of improv classes in 3 seconds, everybody. You're welcome.
You're welcome. It's truly an education. It's truly a gift. How are you doing, Mathieu?
I'm doing well. I'm exhausted as all get out. A lot of life things happening that are kind of sweeping me up. Like, I'll be moving everyone to the Heights. Yes. I'll be next door neighbors with Lin-Manuel Miranda, in the sense that we're both in the same borough.
Yes-anding.
Yeah. Oh yes, you were yes-anding.
Improv lesson over, exciting. Everyone.
Yeah, no, we're done. We learned and then we lost it. But yeah, that's exciting, but also frustrating and nerve-wracking. I have to buy a bed, which is I hate.
Are you going to go Tempur-Pedic route? Are you going to go...
I don't know. I have the frame that I want, and now it's just a matter of the mattress. And so I'm going to the store of which I intend to purchase my bed frame, and they have a selection of mattresses, and I will try them out after this and see which one I would like.
Yeah. Did you know that you can go to the... I mean, they're not our sponsor, but Casper, if you're listening, I would love to have the same sponsors as What's the Tea, RuPaul's podcast. But did you know that you can go to the Casper mattress store in New York City, make an appointment, and take a nap on a bed there for a half hour to an hour to see how you feel?
Because I did not know that. This. Tell me more. How does one reach the Casper store?
You carrier pigeon, oddly enough, yeah. No, you reach out to them, you make an appointment online, and yeah, it's kind of great. That's what I did years ago, and I had bought a Casper mattress, and in a long, very drawn out story, I no longer have a Casper mattress. But we don't need to get into that.
No, we don't. I'm already bored by that story. So
I was
thank
as
you,
well.
John.
I'm so sorry.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
I will go very fast because I want to get to the big topic today. But yes. I saw Mean Girls about a week ago, followed mm-hmm. by Three Tall Women, followed by Summer, the Donna Summer musical.
Summer Donna.
Samadana. Yeah. What I will say about Mean Girls is that I had heard various accounts of it, yes. and to an extent, they are all true.
Yes. Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. The cast is quite exceptional.
Mm.
It is funny. It is not, however, truly the movie. It does not hold the same spirit as the movie, which was a letdown for me.
Yeah.
The movie
is magic.
I mean, it is magic. It really is iconic in a lot of ways. And
mm-hmm.
The musical softens it a great deal, at least in terms of its satire. And the movie isn't even all that vicious, but
Mm-mm.
it is more so than the musical. The musical is a lot more like, be yourself, be yourself, be yourself, be yourself. Yeah. The way that
here's
I
a moral
it, I...
millennials. Have lots
exactly.
of fun. Enjoy this hashtag. You know
exactly. The one thing they do really well is they do incorporate modern social media. One thing they do. Grow up, Lemon. They do incorporate social media very well into the story. They've updated it pretty well for like this generation, which is I thought very admirable. They changed a lot of elements of the plot, which I'm normally not offended by, but a couple of things I thought were not to the right extent. For example, they changed the origin a bit of the Janice and Regina relationship. So it's
okay.
You still find out that they were best friends and Regina humiliated her with a whole lesbian plot line. But one of the things that they changed was how you found out about it. And it's going to sound, once again, like I'm digging way too deep in something for a show called Mean Girls. But I don't know. I feel like these things make sense. In the musical, Regina lies to Katie about what went down with her and Janice. She's like, oh, yeah, we were best friends. And then she freaked out because I couldn't invite her to my pool party because I only had a certain number of girls.
Right,
and then
there
Katie,
be girls
like,
in their bathing suit. And she was a lesbian. She couldn't be
she
around
was a
girls.
Lesbian.
Yeah.
But like that's what she tells Katie. And then like 10 minutes later, Damien's like, that's a lie. Here's what really happened. And I guess Regina cornered Janice in the parking lot of their middle school because students are. Did you have a parking lot of your middle school that you hung out in, John? I don't know these things.
I was homeschooled for most of the middle school experience, which I'm sure no one could ever guess that I was homeschooled, even though I've already mentioned it.
But
I was homeschooled for most of middle school, so I only spent 1 year in a public middle school, and mm-hmm. I can safely say I did not hang out in parking lots.
Okay. That was something that definitely bugged me. They were like, it was eighth grade and we were all in the parking lot. I was like, is that something kids did when they're like 13?
I guess we all congregated in front of the school beforehand, so maybe if the parking lot theoretically is near the entrance.
Okay. I'll buy it. But yeah, she like corners Janice in eighth grade and is like, are you a lesbian? It's this whole thing. What I don't like about it is that by having Regina lie to Katie about it at the beginning implies that Regina knows that it's that what she did was mean and vicious, whereas in the movie, she flat out tells Katie what happened with a sort of nonchalant air of, like, this crazy story about this girl who was obsessed with me. And
right.
You watch Lindsay Lohan's face. I maintain it's some great acting on her part. It's really great reacting on her part.
Yeah.
You just sort of, like, see the horror in her eyes, but she also has to cover it and act like she's on Regina's side at the same time because she...
Completely.
You know, yeah. And it's a great scene. You just, like, hear this awful story told so nonchalantly by Regina because she doesn't think it's a big deal.
Well, right. The best kind of villains are people who don't think that they're villains, you know?
Yeah. That's a theme of the musical. And in the movie, Janice is like, you plastic thinks that we all are obsessed with you, but we all hate you.
Right.
And you don't truly get that vibe in the musical. You really get the idea that Regina rules with fear and she's a lot more outwardly vicious to people in the musical, which I understand. It's a musical, everything kind of has to be heightened, But there's something to be said about Rachel McAdams' performance in the film where it's all very sort of subtle and she'll smile at you, but with these shark eyes, so you know it's not truly, like, kind.
Yeah.
So all that aside, I still had a good, enjoyable time. The music has been the thing that I've heard a lot of divisive reactions about.
Same.
I would say for the most part. My issue with the music in it is more that it's super bipolar. It is, like, one second old school Broadway, then the next second they're trying to be teeny boppery, and then the next second there's a samba, and then they go back to teeny boppery, then to Broadway, then to a rap, and I'm like, it's just very disjointed. It doesn't feel like a cohesive unit.
Sure.
Yeah.
And especially for a musical that is written by one person, whereas even a musical such as SpongeBob is written by, you know, about 1,000 people. You know, that's not a great thing to could be better.
It could be. And like, and SpongeBob, with the exception of maybe one or two songs, it's surprisingly cohesive for all those people.
Right, that's,
on it.
That's what I've heard, which is very interesting, you know.
Yeah, it works very well. As I said, like, it's a fun time. If you've never seen the movie, I'm sure you will love it. If you have seen the movie and you enjoy the movie as much as I do, and I'm sure as much as John does, you will get a sense of what's missing. I'll say no, I'll say no, get off with your notes and your rules and your games, and those sycophants who follow you, I'll remember all their names, and when they drag you down like they inevitably do, I will not laugh along with them and approve their past coup, because that's not me. Moving on to something a little less deep, I saw the Edward Albee Pulitzer Prize winning drama Three Tall Women. It's like a lighthearted affair.
Yeah, honestly. Although, to be honest, I know nothing of this show. I truly, truly have shit the bed when it comes to this show.
I knew very little about it myself. I knew, like, the basic plot of it, if you could call it that. It is truly, like, a concept play. There's no real, like, beginning, middle, and end in terms of action. It is a concept play about aging and women of different decades and what it means to be a woman and the double-edged sword of being a strong woman in particular in a male-dominated society. And I will say it is surprisingly funny, so I will say leave with that.
I know people who saw simultaneously when A Doll's House Part 2 was debuting on Broadway, South Coast Rep was, I think I've mentioned this before, but South Coast Rep was doing it at the same time out in California because they commissioned the show to be written by Lucas. And that production was a serious drama with nary a laugh. Meanwhile, in the Broadway production, I was laughing so hard. Yes, it ripped my heart out as well. But I think maybe Laurie Metcalf just has the most... She just calls upon the power of humor that comes from the deepest of darkest of places in humanity, and we're all here for it. I'm here for it.
Absolutely. She is everyone in Three Tall Women is absolutely incredible. Glenda Jackson, Laurie Metcalf, Alison Pill are all great. What they do, and what I really think is the smartest thing to do in a play like this that does deal with some, you know, very large themes, is they do use humor as a way to bring in the audience, which is what I thought was so brilliant about Doll's House Part 2 and why it's actually so interesting for me to hear you talk about how the South Coast Rep production was a lot more dramatic.
Yeah.
Because I thought that the Broadway production was so good at drawing the audience in, sort of letting their guard down with all the laughter, and then sort of like socking them over the head in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
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 And this does that too.
Yeah, it's power of art, you guys, power of theater. Things just don't need to be done one way.
And more importantly, it was an hour and 40 minutes, which I'm obsessed with. I love me a good intermission, a 100-minute show. Yeah.
Good in, out. Let's get cracking.
In, and out. And then to top it all off, yesterday I saw Summer of the Donna Summer musical.
Summer of the Donna Summer.
Son of the Donna Summer. And I will
Donna
say...
Donna the Donna Donna.
All I will say is that the two women behind me were living their best life. Every time a song came on that they knew, they stood up and started clapping along.
Brilliant. There we go.
Yeah. And Ariana DeBose plays Donna sort of at the height of her disco powers. And she is stunning from in every way, shape, and form. She sings
beautifully. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I thought overall gave a really lovely performance, not just like vocally and dancing wise, but was able to turn out a fully rounded character with, I thought, material that kind of lacked in that respect.
That's great.
She also, yeah, I was, the one thing that they that the Donna Summer musical failed at that I was surprised by was I did not think that they costumed and lit all three Donnas in a flattering enough way, which I felt like, because Donna Summer was known to be extremely glamorous, and they called her like the Black Marilyn Monroe, and so for this show you would expect like any time Ariana DeBose came on stage to dance or sing something that she would just be like traffic stoppingly stunning, and I like, there were moments where she was, but I watching it I was reminded actually of Mean Girls, because if there's one thing that everyone in the production team of Mean Girls did successfully was that they managed to make Regina an ultimate diva worship figure.
Right.
The way Taylor Lautner is costumed, the way she's lit, the way her voice works in the score, the way the staging is all enveloped around her, it is the ultimate kind of diva worship, the kind that I haven't seen in a while. And the Donna Summer musical could take a note from that in terms of how to truly make your divas like the shining beacon of your piece.
Well, honey, the shining beacon of my piece. Oh, honey.
Oh, God. So I was trying to be eloquent, and you were being eloqueer.
Honey, oh, honey, the shining beacon, more like the shining beak off, because, honey, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. This is not.
Let me also be clear.
Successful.
I'm also 100% here for your puns, John. Just because I groan doesn't mean I'm not here for it. I'm just mad I didn't think of it.
No, it was dumb. It was just dumb. I'm dumb. Okay. Well, that's great. I'm really glad to hear that about Ariana, just because I was oddly surprised, in maybe not the most positive way, by her performance in A Bronx Tale.
Would you mind telling me more about her in that? Because when I saw it, she had left. And my thoughts on the show are meh at best, so I don't know what she might have brought to that show or didn't bring to that show.
To be honest, she was just very meh. There was literally a moment in the show, the performance that I saw, which was a press night, where she was supposed to laugh, and she literally said the words "ha ha." She didn't laugh. She went "ha ha," and I was like, "Are you tired? What?"
She works hard for the money.
I don't know if she did. I don't know.
No.
I don't mean to talk shit about anyone, but I'm glad, because I think she is super talented. I think she's amazing, and so I'm glad that she's getting a real shining turn in the Donna.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a totally shining turn. Again, the production and the material do fight her in that respect. But I definitely went in expecting to adore LaShawn's and be like, okay, yeah, and Ariana DeBose. And, like, LaShawn's did fine. She is unfortunately saddled with all the narration. She, like, barely has any scene work. It's almost all narration from LaShawn's, which I'm like,
that's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. And Ariana has most of the scene work and most of the songs. And I know from a few people involved in it that they are trying to petition Ariana for featured actress in a musical. And they might get away with it, but I don't know how anyone who can see that show can say she's a featured part. She is as much a co-lead as LaShawn's. She's on stage just as much, if not more.
Right. Oh, the politics, which segues us to bum ba da bum 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 bum.
The Emmy Awards. Is that not a subject we talk about?
No, you silly goose.
The Tony.
It's starting to be award season. Do you feel it? Do you smell the Amy Poehler in her book calls awards? She calls it the pudding. Do you smell the pudding? Did you read her book? Have you ever?
I did. I read it a little while ago, but I did read it.
Do you remember the whole section about the pudding?
I don't. I remember her talking about for her category 1 year, them all going up onto the stage and like acting like it was a Miss America pageant.
Yes. Yeah. She definitely covers that, but she has this really amazing way of describing what it is like to go through an experience of being nominated for a huge award like that, because you kind of start off thinking, oh, you know, you kind of convince yourself for preservation's sake, oh, I'm not going to get even nominated. I'm not going to happen. I don't want to get nominated. You know, who cares? I'm so happy with the work that I do. And then the way that she puts it is she's like, she says, and then all of a sudden someone hands you this bowl of pudding and you didn't really know that you were hungry for pudding or that you necessarily wanted pudding. But now that the pudding is in front of you, you can't stop thinking about wanting to eat the pudding and you really want the pudding. So it's pudding season, y'all.
The Tony!
As we record this, the Outer Critics Circle nominations and the Drama Desk nominations have come out.
Yes.
And next Tuesday will be the Tony Award nominations.
Honestly, the hour is nigh. The is that a word? We are getting close to I mean, honestly, the nominations will be here.
Yes. Winter is coming.
My gosh. It is.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that analogy. I actually, now that you talk about it, I do remember that part of her book, where she talks about the pudding. Yeah. And
oh my gosh,
that's honestly how I kind of feel about awards. I don't think that, in no way, are awards the be-all, end-all. You know, like, no one looks back on who won the Tony Award for Best Musical in 1970 and go, oh, yes, like, clearly the best of the lot, and, you know, because it won, it's, you know, undisputed, that's the winner. Like, you know, history has a way of outing the true quality shows. And sometimes that's the show that wins, and sometimes it's the show that doesn't. But they're still fun to go through. I like the whole hullabaloo. It's nice to bet on stuff and to make predictions and to sort of just watch the frenziness. And even if for quality's sake they don't mean a lot, they do help a lot of shows that sometimes are struggling to get more exposure to the ticket-buying public.
And most importantly, this year, the big pudding, the Tony Awards, are being hosted by Sarah Bareilles and Josh Groban. So, excuse me, let me grab some popcorn and my teenage ass, hop onto a TV real quick and watch two of my idols. I mean,
yeah. And Groban, so Christ excited. Superstar, yeah.
Oh, Groban. Josh Groban. He was one of my first celebrity crushes. He was my first concert I ever went to. I went with one of my female high school friends, and it was me and a bunch of women in their 50s. And this old woman who was sitting in front of me eventually turned around and goes, "Ooh, do you want to borrow my binoculars so you could see him better?" And I looked at her for a second, and I just said, "Yeah, a doy." So I borrowed a 50-year-old woman's binoculars at a Josh Groban concert to ogle him. So, you know, normal things. Yeah.
Yeah. That's honestly, that's so you that I have no retort. I listened to that story and I went, yeah, that sounds like something that would happen to John.
It's a V John Miscavige thing to happen.
Deep V. Absolutely.
Deep.
Yeah, I mean, now that I've seen a lot more of the stuff this season, and you have seen quite a few things as well, I like to look at trends with the Tony Awards. I like to see sort of where their tastes lean to, what's happened in the past. The Tony Awards are a weird beast because with the Oscars, we have the Golden Globes and we have the SAG Awards and the Critics' Choice, and those are all related precursors to Oscar nominations because they're all sort of in a similar voting pool. And same with the Emmys. The Tonys, the two precursor awards, the Outer Critics Circle and the Drama Desk, are 100% different nominating and voting pools than the Tony Awards. So there are years where people who have won a Tony Award weren't even nominated earlier that year for either award.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually just telling John, their three years ago, was very famous because Kelly O'Hara was not nominated for The King and I at the Drama Desk Awards and then went on to win the Tony Award later that year. And like Kinky Boots, 2 years before that, wasn't nominated for Best Musical at the Drama Desk Awards and went on to win Best Musical. So like,
it's all suggestive.
It is. And I remember last year.
Subjective. Like, oh my God. I was like, that's not the right word.
You said, wait, did you say suggestive originally?
I did say suggestive. I was like, oh my gosh, John, have another sip of coffee, you dumb bitch.
It's okay, John. You're really skinny. Oh, don't worry about it.
I am. Thank you so much for noticing. I've been.
It's what I'm here for, baby. I'm here to support you and your skinniness.
Yeah, I looked in the mirror earlier this week and I was like, oh my gosh, is that Skeletor? No, it's me, bitches.
Who needs to know words when you're that skinny?
Seriously, I just, people look at me and they think it's a miracle that I can even produce enough energy to breathe. So if words come out, it's even more impressive, even if the words are nonsensical, which is how I've made a living.
It is. It's how we both make living.
Truth.
How we both make a living.
Yes.
Gross. Anywho, I would love to get your take, Mr. John, and I'll give mine as well. I want to do some predictions for Tuesday, and then we'll the next episode we'll see how well we did.
Yeah, I've been scanning over the Drama Desk Award nominations, and it's really interesting. You know, it's always so fun. I think that the Drama Desks are there. And that they celebrate off-Broadway as well, because there are so many cool performances that are being celebrated that, and the Tonys just gets looked over. And it's really cool too. Ashley Park is nominated for 2 awards for the Drama Desk. I mean, she's nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. So, you know, how cool would that be? Or how cool is that just period? You know?
It's very cool.
And so, yeah, I nowhere have seen, actually, especially now looking at this list of nominations, have seen as many Broadway shows this season because of, you know, where I've been, as you. And so I a lot of these guesses are just kind of based off of hearsay, but it kind of seems like, I mean, I would say, I guess, nominations for Best Musical are probably going to go to... I mean, Revival is easy because Revival's what? There's only 3: Carousel, My Fair Lady, and Once on This Island.
Yes, but you know that the way that it works is when it's 3 contenders,
they only pick 2.
It's technically 2 slots, and and there would be a third if I think it's like 3 votes or fewer. Yeah, for the second spot. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will. It will be very interesting to see. I haven't heard much about the My Fair Lady revival because it just started previews last week.
They opened last week.
Oh, they opened last week. Oh, I was way off.
Way off. Yeah, no, today I think is the last show of the season to open, which is I Spent Cometh. And by today, correct. I mean this Thursday, April 26th.
Yes. So, yeah, so it's interesting, but it kind of seems like, I guess, for... The 2 main contenders, if you go off the Drama Desks for Best Musical for the Tony Award nomination, are going to be SpongeBob and Mean Girls. What else do you think is going to be thrown in the mix there?
Well,
it's normally 4, right? Or
four. Yeah, it'll be 4 this year. The not frustrating, but the I don't know. I can't think of words now.
You're welcome.
it's you're contagious, John, in more than one way.
I am. Go to a clinic. Get tested.
The band's visit isn't eligible for Drama Desk or Outer Critics Circle Awards because it opened last year off Broadway and it was eligible for those awards.
Of course. How could I forget about that little gem? That without a doubt, I think that'll be nominated.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would honestly stake my claim into saying that The Band's Visit has musical score and book pretty much locked up.
Pretty locked in, yeah. I would agree with that.
I would say Tina Fey poses a slight threat to book for in book. Terms of winning the Tony Award for
I've
for
heard
mean
her
Girls.
Book is really fantastic for it.
It's good. It's a good book. I would not go so far as to say it's fantastic. I think that it's that thing where they, in trying to cover certain plot holes of the movie, they've thus created more plot holes
more
in the show.
Holes. Oh, that always drives me cuckoo bananas.
I know, right? I'm like, I don't know. It's plot holes are always going to exist. Don't try to like constantly cover your tracks. You're going to They multiply.
Yeah, they do. Like, plot holes just exist because in life there are plot holes, to be honest. Yeah. It's like we crave an explanation for everything. Mm-hmm. And especially in our TV shows, because it's something that we feel we can control. But you just can't. There's just going to be plot holes, you guys. It just happens.
Yeah. Just deal with it, people.
Calm down, everyone.
Deal with fucking plot holes, y'all. But no, her book is good, and it's probably the best thing about the show, other than the performances. I think it's the fact that it is a pretty strong book, plus the fact that it is Tina Fey.
Right.
That will pose a threat, but I still would put my money on Band's Visit for musical score and book. Yes. What was interesting to read about the Drama Desk Awards for me was a couple of things. Was Carousel coming in hot with like a gazillion nominations. Yeah.
Especially after, you know, last episode we discussed you being one of the, I mean, you are without a doubt my most Carousel obsessed friend in an impressive way. That is not a read at all. That is
not in a like hide your kids, hide your wife kind of way, but in a like, oh, okay.
Yeah, completely. So I was very shocked to see them leading the Drama Desk nominations, and Once on This Island kind of getting
the shaft of it.
Yeah, I think they totally got the shaft.
I've been surprised. Once on This Island has sort of gotten in the shaft in different categories for both the Outer Critics Circle and the Drama Desk. So like, it got a bunch of technical stuff for the Drama Desk that it did not get at the Outer Critics Circle. But like I'm sorry, I don't care if you enjoyed Carousel or not. If you saw Carousel and you saw Once on This Island, there is not a world in which you would go, let's nominate Jack O'Brien over Michael Arden. I don't see how that world works. But
yeah,
that's just me. The way I look at it, honestly, this is my personal thoughts on the show aside, I see Carousel with the Drama Desk Awards having a similar trajectory to Anastasia last year. For those of you who don't remember
about Anastasia,
Anastasia is a textbook example of how the Drama Desk are not a precursor to the Tonys, because Anastasia led with like 10 nominations last year, and then come Tony Awards, like two, in the exact reverse, Groundhog Day got like one nomination at the Drama Desk and then got seven at the Tony Awards,
right?
So I mean, they're different voting pools, different things are eligible. Certain people are in different categories of the Drama Desks than they are at the Tony Awards.
I mean, it's also just kind of sad already talking about shows from last season and thinking, oh, yeah, that's closed. That's closed.
Yeah. No more Great Comet. That's closed. No more Groundhog Day.
Oh, I know.
But that's also the nature of Broadway, you know. Like I'm always sad when a show that I like closes, but I'm always excited about what could possibly come in after it. Because you know, if everything stays open, we're gonna have to just keep building more and more theaters, because otherwise nothing new happens. We don't progress.
Right. Yeah.
But that's just me.
It is just you. You're all alone in those thoughts.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
Did you see that article that was about, what was it? The title was kind of scathing in some ways. It was like, Broadway's pandering to out-of-town audiences has backfired immensely.
I did see that. The article, for those of you who didn't read it, and I am almost 100% sure anyone who's listening to this podcast has read it. Is this the new theater columnist for the New York Post wrote this really scathing article about all the new stuff coming in this year and next year as well. That is very safe, pandering, you know, no craft whatsoever.
He's saying what we're all thinking, to be honest, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't say he's wrong.
No.
But I think that also kind of, and he acknowledges that there was some really great stuff in the last 3 years, and those are the things that have really taken off. So I think his intention for the article was to remind producers and creatives that you don't have to do a cartoon movie or TV show or another jukebox musical to make a dollar.
Right.
Like, think of all the revenue that Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen have taken in, and those are so different and new and not based off of a blockbuster film or a previous song catalog.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's room for all kinds of shows on the Broadway. I think we had the misfortune of having three really great seasons where, you know, all four best musical nominees and the play nominees were all just very different and interesting and new. And then this season, unfortunately, it has just been lackluster.
It's been Disney.
It has been Disney. And there's been, like, some bright spots. Band's Visit, I think, is a really lovely musical. I've been told that Harry Potter, even, you know, special effects aside, is a very wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And again, Three Tall Women and Angels in America, we've got two plays that are really, you know, nailing it. And Once on This Island is great. And I've heard fantastic things about My Fair Lady. So, like, there are things. There are things this season. But it's not, after 3 years of being spoiled by, you know, the new works, this year is just a letdown.
Yeah, I agree.
Which brings us back to the Tony Awards.
Right. I think, well, now that we've put number three in the best musical category with Ben's Visit, what do you think is going to go to the fourth? I have a guess that's just off of the top of my head. I'm intrigued to see if it's the same. What do you think it's going to be?
So we said Mean Girls, Ben's Visit, and SpongeBob. For a while, I was going to say Frozen, but due to, like, the recent attention it's been getting, and I know I'm saying this off the heels of saying that Dramadesk's and Outer Critic Circle awards don't mean anything, I would not be surprised if Prince of Broadway ends up replacing Frozen for the fourth musical nomination.
You really think so?
I'm not saying that it will. That's not my final prediction. Frozen is still my fourth prediction. But I'm saying I see an alternate reality where that happens, and I would not necessarily be floored. Nah.
Yeah, I kind of see that. I completely am of the school that I think it's probably going to be Frozen. I do just because of a couple factors, but it is really interesting to see, to once again be looking at this Drama Desk nominations and see Frozen getting what, two nominations?
They got the Shaft, definitely.
Yeah, two nominations. For Outstanding Puppet Design and Best Featured Actor in a Musical. Or Outstanding Featured Actor in a Musical.
Lead Actor.
And to be honest, I would not consider his role a lead.
No. He's actually been deemed featured by the Tony Awards, which is another reason why it all just, like, makes no sense.
Yeah, I would not call Jelani, who's playing, I literally get everyone's Christoph. Name in Frozen.
Kristoff.
For half the show, I thought his name was Sven, and someone, you know, finally I thought, oh, yeah, that's the moose elk thing. But, yeah, it was a bizarre, very interesting, weird. Yeah. All words also describe me.
All things that I've described you. I'm going to put it in your my lexicon. Obituary. Oh, no, your obituary. Sure.
Okay, sure, too. I'm dying. Yeah, there we go.
I'm going to give you a No Guts, No Glory prediction. Stephen Hoggett, brilliant Stephen Hoggett. I think that's how I pronounce his name. He did Once with John Tiffany. He did American Idiot. Yeah, the choreographer. He's done the movement work on Harry Potter, and he is considered eligible for choreography as well.
And I've heard that choreography is just
insane.
For lack of a better word, magical.
Yeah. I've heard exactly the same. I'll give you a more detailed account after tonight and then again tomorrow night. But, I mean, I loved his work in the past to begin with. And from what I understand, a lot of the big effects in the show are movement-based. There's, like, not wires or any kind of trick. It's just how the actors move with the scenery.
Yeah.
And I am fully convinced that he will get a nomination in Best Choreography alongside Justin Peck for Carousel, Camille Brown for Once on This Island, and then I would probably say Casey Nicholaw for Mean Girls, and then the fifth spot, I would say Christopher Catelli for either SpongeBob or My Fair Lady, depending on where the Tonys lean to.
Yeah.
I also see a world, depending on what they decide Taylor Lautermann goes in. Taylor Lautermann can either go into featured or leading, the way that the show is written.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. I could see that as well. Who do you think your other best female actresses are going to be?
All know Katrina Lenk is, you know, she's up there.
Oh, yes. I mean, honestly, I think this could be her year.
I thought that, and I can't say for certain until I see My Fair Lady in June. I'm seeing it literally the night before the Tony Awards. Mm. I will say, My Fair Lady opened last week, and some of the reviews that Lauren Ambrose got, like, you could kill yourself the next day and be satisfied. Like, she got the kind of reviews that you can't buy. They were so, like, more than one critic said that, like, George Bernard Shaw would have bowed down to her after her performance.
Well, to which, that is language that is hyperbolish, but...
Isn't it? Well, hyperbolish. Well, I mean...
I love that word.
Hyperbolish.
I think it's made it up.
Words. You do not know words, but...
I don't.
Yeah, you know, that said, her reviews have been absolutely incredible, and I think... I do still predict that it's Katrina Lenk's year. I think so too. But I think Lauren Ambrose still poses a threat. Not a fatal threat, but a threat
nonetheless. And she is more of a name, and we've seen multiple times in the past that the Broadway community is not without fault in...
No.
Rewarding
names?
In really feeding into the idea of, you know, this person's more famous and so they're better, you know, that awful kind of old way of thinking.
Yeah. The way I always saw
it, if she is super, I mean, I'm sure she is super talented, if these reviews are true, then there's also a world where, you know, many people have completely deserved their awards. You know, from what I've heard from Neil Patrick Harris's performance in Hedwig, I heard that, you know, he was amazing in it, just completely, like, jaw-dropping. So,
you know, he was great and definitely deserved it. I would say every time I see a celebrity win a Tony Award, and when I say celebrity, I don't mean a Neil Patrick Harris. I literally mean someone who, like, does not do theater very often. Like a Catherine Zeta-Jones or a...
Right.
And again, not to, like, throw shade, just that kind of situation where someone deigns Broadway with their presence and the Tony Awards award them, it's almost their way of being like, we would like you to come back and do Broadway again, so we're going to treat you really well right now.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes they do. I have mad respect for Daniel Radcliffe, who has been on Broadway 3 times and has still yet to be Tony nominated for, you know... One performance that I saw.
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought he should have been nominated for Cripple of Inishman when I saw it, but...
Yeah, I heard he was fantastic.
He was, and I give him credit. Each time, you know, he came out, didn't get nominated, he came back to do Broadway again, and I don't think it's for the glory. I think he just really enjoys it.
Billy, I'd like to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
Something that I saw in my obsessive research of past nominees, because every Tony season I get very in-depth and creative, and I look back into the history of things, and I realized...
Obsessive?
I don't know what you're talking about, John. Stop it. I am on the surface with everything. I am a surface-level queen. That's... Everyone knows that about me.
Oh,
ask
yeah.
all 5 therapists I've ever had.
They're dead now.
I did realize in the last 10 years, the majority of best leading actress and musical winners have been in revivals. It's usually
so interesting.
Yeah, it's usually like every couple of years. So like last year we had Bette Midler, then we had Cynthia Erivo, Kelly O'Hara. Jesse Mueller was obviously an original for Beautiful, but then once again, Bettina Miller, Sutton Foster, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Jeez.
Yeah, like it's so maybe this will be Katrina Lenk's year to, you know, break the trend with an original one, or Lauren Ambrose can keep the trend going.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes sense in a weird way that it does seem almost correct, because I think sometimes it's hard to realize what you have special and something that's completely new that you've never seen someone do before.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a revival, these women have taken these roles that we know and have put their spin on it that are just, it's so refreshing and amazing and lovely. And so it in a way, it kind of makes sense that a lot of them have been revivals. But at the same time, I think that says a lot about how our brains work in a subjective, I use the right word there,
yes,
manner. Yeah. Because I think it's easier for us to, for lack of a better term, judge something when we have a precedent set. Whereas when it's someone completely, or someone doing something completely original or new, you may think, oh, I love this, and this is great, this is amazing. But you don't, sometimes it's hard to realize the depth or the gravity of how much someone has created of a role from scratch, you know? Does that make sense?
Yes. And I want to applaud you for using all the right words.
I'm growing, mother.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes complete sense. And yeah, you're right. It is easier to see the work that someone's done when there is, as you said, when there's a precedent set for that role. And you can say, here's the new elements that they brought to it.
Right. Yeah, here's their brilliant spin. But also, I will say, in my experience, not to shame anyone or lessen their performance or their talent at all, but as someone who's done a fair amount of new musicals, who just finished a brand new musical, and now is working on a show that's been around for 20 years, it is interesting because you, there's almost a level of pressure that's taken off because you already know what kind of has already been done. You're like, oh, well, I'm just going to do it this way. Whereas when the whole world of possibilities in front of you for a complete brand new work, you might be like, cool. Well, I have about 1,000 options, so I'll try to whittle that down to one choice and make that, you know, in like any given moment. So it's interesting, you know.
Both definitely have their obstacles with taking something that's already been done before, especially if it was done, you know, very iconically beforehand.
Right.
You have to find a way to approach it your own way that still is true to the material and doesn't make anyone go, oh, well, so-and-so did it better beforehand.
Right.
Yeah. It's right. Basically, as an actor, you just can't win unless you do win. Unless you do win a Tony Award.
You can't win unless you win. Right.
You can't
exactly.
win unless you win. That's, kids, that is a good lesson for life. Mm. You can never win.
I'm going to stitch that on a pillow.
You can't win unless you win.
Yeah. Truly.
Truly scrumptious.
Dumb.
Yeah. I would say, in our last couple of minutes of this episode, John, let's carve out the rest, a couple more categories, make some final predictions, and then we'll see where we're at next week. So we said musical, Band's Visit, SpongeBob, Mean Girls, Frozen.
Possibly Frozen, or I'm intrigued by your idea of Prince of Broadway, but I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I don't truly think it'll happen. I don't know, it's like a sneaking suspicion.
Especially because it's closed already, and a lot of that tends to sometimes dampen a show's chances, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Leading actress in a musical, I will say Katrina Lenk, Lauren Ambrose, Hayley Kilgore, 100% locks the three of them. Then I'm going to go on a limb and say Patty Murin for Frozen.
I hope so too. I was honestly really shocked that both she and Hayley were not nominated at all. I was very shocked.
Yeah, that was a faux pas on their part, in my personal opinion.
I think so as well.
Yeah. I will also now go on a limb and say, should Taylor Lautermann get put in leading, I think she will get the fifth nomination over both LaShawn's and Jesse Mueller. No guts, no glory. No guts, no glory.
Interesting.
I can't rightfully say if that's who I would personally pick, but that's how I predict it happening.
Sure.
Yes. Finagle your fifth one, if you would like, please.
No, I honestly, because of the limited amount of shows that I've seen, most of the nominees that you've mentioned are in the shows that I've seen. Mm-hmm. So I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, who else?
Yeah. We have LaShawn's, Jesse Mueller. There's the other girl in Mean Girls, Erica Henningsen, who plays Katie, who is lovely, but they do not give her the best material.
I honestly feel like your predictions are pretty solid with that, pretty spot on.
Well, thank you. I've already said that I think Cursed Child will get a Best Score nomination over Mean Girls. Which I am very interested to see if that actually does happen, but that is my No Guts, No Glory prediction on that front. I think Best Book will mirror the Best Musical nominees. And then what are some other major ones we can hash out for a quick second?
I mean Best Play, Best
those pesky plays.
Yeah, Best Play, feature, or like a leading actor in a musical. I'm trying to even think of some of the plays that I've seen this year or what I've seen. I think Cursed Child will get nominated.
Yes. I would say that.
I think Angels will get nominated, obviously, for Revival, without a doubt.
I see a world in which Three Tall Women, Cursed Child, and Angels in America dominate the nominations. And not only that, among the three of them will most likely take up all the acting awards, too.
Hmm. What are the big new plays, though, this season?
It's really just Cursed Child. I looked at Drama Desk and Outer Critics Circle just to sort of remind myself.
But it was mostly off-Broadway plays in those categories.
But there's also Junk, which was at Lincoln Center, which I think will get nominated, just because, again, it was such a light year.
I keep thinking that that was last year, because Junk and Sweat, for some reason, go hand in hand in my brain.
They're one were title plays in about things. Yeah, you know, they're exactly the same thing. The other one was Farinelli and the King, which I didn't see, but I knew that was Mark Rylance.
I heard pretty good things about it, like weird things, but yeah,
and it's Mark British, Rylance, so I'm sure it'll get nominated.
Right.
The fourth one, The Children, which I didn't see as well, but I was told that it's a British import and it was people fighting in a living room. It'll most likely get nominated.
Yeah, that sounds like a nomination to me. Living rooms? Sold.
Living room? Sign me up.
There we go.
Then, featured actor in a play. This is where it's actually going to be tricky, because Angels has four possible contenders, and I'm very interested to see if any of them cancel each other out come nomination time.
Or if they all get nominated, honestly, right? What fun would that be?
That would be four actors from Angels, and then the actor from Harry Potter, Anthony Boyle, I think is his name.
Oh, is he the one who plays, I've heard the one who plays Lucius's... Draco's son, sorry. Who plays, Draco's son is amazing. Yes. I've heard that he is. I've heard he's actually a main contender for the whole season.
As have I. And I definitely think that he's a lock for a nomination, as is Nathan Lane. Everything else is how many other actors from Angels will get nominated, who else from Cursed Child will get nominated. I understand that there are one or two people in Iceman Cometh and Travesties who are also very good. So it could either be super dominated by Angels, or it could be mixed around. At the moment, I would say Nathan Lane is the only lock in featured actor for Angels.
Oh, yeah. I think New York would just spontaneously combust if he did not get a nomination for Angels in America.
I mean, it helps that he's fantastic in it, but yes, it's
right.
The lineup of it all. It checks off way too many boxes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and same. I mean, I literally have heard nothing but mind-blowingly raving reviews of him in the show, but...
Exactly.
Checks off a lot of boxes.
Exactly. And then I think Laurie Metcalf and Alison Pill are both pretty safe for featured actress in a play. I think that they will, unless, I don't know if they've decided yet with Laurie Metcalf if she's going into leading or into featured. I don't know if that's been determined yet.
I don't know. I don't remember if they announced that yet or what.
Right,
or maybe they haven't ruled.
She will get nominated either way because she's Laurie fucking Metcalf.
Right.
But, yes.
Right.
But if she's in featured, I think the two of them are a safe bet. Denise Goff. Cuff, I don't know how you pronounce her last name. Harper and Angels. I think she'll be nominated. Yeah. And then, honestly, the other two spots are kind of up for grabs in my... Hermione and Cursed Child. And then...
Oh, yes, yeah. I've heard amazing things from her as well.
As have I. I think the fifth spot will be up for grabs for that one. So I'm interested to see who that chick is.
It's me. Surprise.
Surprise, guys. John's been in a Travesties this entire time.
I have.
None of our listeners would know. I don't know if any of them have seen Travesties.
I know I haven't.
Tom Stoppard? Anybody? Tom Stoppard? No. He doesn't write anything that requires high belting, so why would we go see it?
Yeah. Null and void.
Uh-uh. Null and void. No mini skirts, no high belting. Go see Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Exactly. I will also say in Mean Girls, those girls sing so high that I wanted to applaud them just for like making it to the theater that day. I was like, how do you know that you're gonna have to sing? Because the way that the songs work,
for there just not being a small pool of blood constantly on the stage from like bleeding vocal folds.
Well, and especially because the songs don't build to those high notes. It's sort of like Jeff Richmond's like, yeah, you're gonna like stay in your lower region for three verses, and then the final verse will just go up the octave. And I'm like, how do you walk into the theater each day knowing you're gonna have to do that and not go, I need a Xanax?
Right.
Oh God.
Training. So important.
Half of them went to Michigan, so just go to Michigan, kids.
Training. Just go to Michigan.
Mm-hmm. This episode is sponsored by University of Michigan.
Yes.
And Squatty Potty.
Go Blue, Casper Mattress.
Go Blue.
Squatty Potty.
Go Squatty Potty. All right. So those are some major No Guts, No Glory predictions we've made. Thank you, everyone.
It'll be very interesting to see how the cookie crumbles.
I know. We're gonna come back in a week or so and see how well we did.
See how wrong or right we were. What just happened to my voice? What is going on?
Oh, no.
I went through third puberty there because I've already been through two.
Yes, John goes through puberty every 5 years.
Every 5 years, honestly.
It's like the Loch Ness Monster.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. Yes, and me, bitch.
Yes, have that we learned Loch Ness nothing? Monster. No, of course I haven't. Oh, God. All right, well, this has been super informative. I'm very excited to see how this is going to go.
Yes.
I trust your opinion more than I trust my own, so...
As well you should.
Don't lead me astray.
I shan't.
Or else.
I don't want to say my opinions are better than other people's, so I'm going to let you say that.
Yeah.
So
we'll see.
Yeah, I think before we go into another tangent, we'll close ourselves out.
Nip this in the butt.
Oh, honey.
Oh, honey.
Dip in the butt. So, everyone, for those of you who are still listening, I am Matt Koplik.
I am John Wascavage.
And this is Sutton Foster closing us out this week. She's waiting.
Have we not had Sutton?
No, she keeps on getting postponed.
Oh, no, because we pushed her back those weeks. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do her. Let's finally do Sutton.
Let's do Sutton in the butt.
No.
Come on.
She's going to do me in the butt. She's such a top.
She is. She honestly is a power top. It's
she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that woman is like a dominating
Hell's Kitchen
power top.
Beware.
That's how she found her pinginess in Gimme Gimme.
Yeah, she fucked someone up the bat.
Yeah.
All right, so on that note.
Because that song's all about power bottoming. Anywho,
it is.
That said, it is. I am Matt.
I'm John, and fly dove, sing sparrow.
Gimme papa, gimme barrel.
In the butt. And this has been Broadway Breakdown.
We'll see you next week after the Tony.
Hopefully.
Hopefully,
after
God.
That ending. No, okay.
One of us will be dead.
Bye.
Bye.
Aphrodite, don't forget me. Romeo and Juliet, me fly dog, sing sparrow. Every fat boy's famous arrow. Give me that thing. Oh,
they say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.